Chapter 28. The first sight of our family's world roused a mixed palette of high emotions. We watched the orbital approach from the yacht's bridge deck, a comfortable, largely ceremonial appurtenance. The yacht was controlled by its own ancilla, like nearly all Forerunner ships, but a parody of old times still required upon landing the presence of the senior family member, in this case my father, who barked out commands in Forerunner Yagon, a language older by far than my parents, but not nearly as old as the Digon the Didact had learned as a young warrior.
Didact. They called me that when I taught at the College of Strategic Defense of the Mantle, the War College. Some of my students seemed to think I was overly demanding and too precise in my definitions.
This upwelling came as no surprise. I had expected something like it. The Didact had sponsored my mutation, after all, and that meant I contained some of his inherent patterns, and possibly even much of his memory. I felt as if something was growing inside me I might not be able to control. I tried not to show outward sign, but my father easily detected the change. Of course, our family's homeworld had changed little. What need for change when every square meter of its surface had been built upon, tuned, and adapted to Forerunner comfort and ambition? Even from 1,000 kilometers, the arc of the planet's limb was visibly ruffled with architecture, though certainly not the equal of the ruins found on any great precursor planet. No vaulting orbital bridges stretching from world to world, no unbending and eternal cables. I flashed back to Chodom Hakor before its mysterious destruction, seeing as if miraculously restored both the precursor ruins and the use that humans had once made of them. But enough. Returning to my family's world again reminded me that builders had nothing to be ashamed of in their quest for architectural dominance. I had once taken a youthful fancy to our elevated oceans, each 1,000 kilometers in diameter and 1,000 meters deep, shining like a belt of overlapping coins around the equator. Each was separated from its neighbor by several hundred meters of elevation, their overlapping depending on whether cascades of water or twisting waterspout funnels joined them. Life workers, by invitation, had for many centuries come to study these great aquariums and experiment with new varieties of exotic creatures, which they sometimes exported to other research groups and hobbyists across the galaxy. Once, I had helped tutor one such experiment, a pod of saltwater reptilians, tri-torsoed carnivores with 3 linked brains and amazing senses, the most intelligent of their kind. Until my mother decided, after several nearly successful attempts on my young life, that these creatures were entirely too dangerous. She terminated the experiment, and the life worker who designed the reptilians was reassigned to another world, far away. Almost as impressive were the arched rockways of the Northern Hemisphere, stretching in a longitudinal belt from the oceans to the perfect circle of the icy pole. Great red and yellow sandstone formations carved by sandblasters, autonomous whirlwinds of grit that hollowed and sculpted and worked until the ancient limestone seabeds were marvels of fretwork. Hikers and travelers could get lost for months in hundreds of thousands of kilometers of winding, spiraling mazes. Though, of course, there was never any real danger, as family scouts were always on call, awaiting signals of distress or just simple boredom. My sister had once delighted in leaving her own peculiar carvings on rock faces within the mazes, inviting others to contribute their own designs. None complied. Hers were too original, too enigmatic. We landed at the family's most extensive manor estate, near the equator between the belt of oceans and a low, ancient mountain range. Our ship spread itself out for maintenance on the landing cradle, and embodied ancillas of many sorts greeted us, along with representatives of the lower-ranking families that shared and conserved the planet on our behalf. My father did not introduce his unfamiliar-looking son, or explain his presence, as no doubt he had neglected to explain my years of absence. The first evening after our return, my sister joined me on the lakefront veranda of the main domicile and sat next to me as the tiara of three small, brilliant suns sank below the horizon, casting all in a shimmering twilight. There followed an unusually bright display of aurora. I could almost make out the additional refraction caused by the fields that protected us from the nastiest radiations of those small, brilliant dwarf stars.
"Did you ever find your treasure?"
she asked gently, touching my arm. If that was meant to divert my gloom or otherwise cheer me, it did not.
"There is no treasure," I said.
"No Organon?"
"Nothing remotely like that."
"Everyone around here is acting very mysterious of late," she said. "Father in particular. It's like he's carrying the weight of the galaxy on his shoulders."
"He's an important builder," I said.
"He's been important since I can remember. Is he more important now than he used to be?"
"Yes,"
I said.
"How?"
"I'd like to know more about that myself."
"Now you're being mysterious."
"I saw things. Terrible things. I'm not sure how much I can explain without causing trouble."
"Trouble? You love trouble."
"Not this kind."
Time to change the subject, she saw. She looked me over with that combination of half-concealed appraisal and kind judgment she had inherited from our mother.
"Mother wonders if you plan to redeem your mutation and reshape yourself," she asked.
"No,"
I said.
"Why, am I especially ugly?"
"Before we females are betrothed, a little slumming between rates is almost mandatory. You have a brutish aspect that would suit a few of my friends perfectly. Do you plan on becoming a warrior?"
Now she was teasing. I ignored the jibe, but felt a twinge at the real possibility.
"My life is no longer my own," I said. "Perhaps it never was."
A sharp retort almost came to her lips. I could tell by her expression that she was on the verge of saying I was full of self-pity. She would not have been wrong. But she subdued the impulse, and I took the unspoken advice to heart. After a long moment, as darkness fell, the nebulae grew brighter in our accustomed eyes, and the veranda was subtly lit and warmed from beneath. She asked,
"What really happened out there?"
It was now that Mother appeared, walking with her perpetual and almost ageless grace across the veranda. She motioned for another chair and, when it formed, sat beside us with a long, grateful sigh.
"It's good to have my finest children all with me again. All here at home," she said.
"Bornstellar was about to tell me what happened on Edom," my sister said.
"Edom. Would that were all to the story. We have punished your swap family for allowing the influence of a life worker to lead you astray."
"Astray."
My sister luxuriated in that word. One last late aurora waved its slow banner, suffusing her smooth face with a flowery pink glow that plunged a barb of regret through me. I would never again share her innocence, her sense of adventure.
"And I certainly hope to pass along a few of the council's finds," Mother added. "We may yet lose this world because of your adventures, Bornstellar. I hope they were worth it."
"Mother!" My sister seemed surprised and distressed. I was not. I had expected this moment for most of my return journey.
"Is any sort of telling allowed?" Mother asked.
"You left Edom. You were advanced to maturity by a disgraced warrior servant."
"By the Didact," I said.
"The dissident Promethean, banished from the council?"
"Victor over humans and Sunshum, protector of the Ecumene for 12,000 years.
My other memory recalled this with no pride, only a sense of regret that more could not have been done.
"Is it all true? Mother asked, her voice soft and a little frightened. The tale of my travels and adventures had been told to her in no depth, apparently, and with major deletions. It's true.
How could you allow yourself to be so misguided?
Edom isn't far from Erde Tyrene. I went there to seek treasure. I was led to believe there might be precursor artifacts, but I found nothing of that sort. Instead, I was guided by a pair of humans to the Didact's cryptum. My sister's esteem grew.
A warrior cryptum? You opened it?
And helped to revive him. He did not call down punishment. He recruited me. My mother tied together the obvious knots of the story.
All this was the librarian's scheme, perhaps?
It seems so.
Then under the compelling influence of an ancient leader, you joined the Didact's cause.
She was trying to put a kind mask on the whole, in her view, sordid episode.
He, no doubt, required your help to accomplish his peculiar ends, and because of your youth, you could not have understood how that might complicate your father's work and cause great harm to our family.
My body isn't the only thing that's changed, I said. I learned much that is hidden from manipulars, and even most forerunners. I learned about something called the Flood.
My sister looked between us, uncomprehending. Mother's expression shifted in an instant from patient sadness to stiff formality.
Where did you hear of that? She asked. Partly from the Didact, and some from the Domain itself.
Then you have experienced the Domain, my sister said. And from the perspective of an ancient warrior, what's that like?
Confused, I admitted. I haven't integrated my perceptions. The knowledge is primitive at best, and I can't go back without further guidance, I think. At any rate, I haven't accessed the Domain since my armor was taken away on the Sanshum quarantine world.
Quarantine? My sister exclaimed. I've heard about the Sanshum. Was it marvelous and sensuous?
Enough has been said of that. Mother looked around the veranda and seemed to be surveying the entire estate through her ancillas, as if anticipating council spies, more fines, and even more severe correction.
I've heard of the Flood. It was a mysterious stellar disease that caused radiation anomalies. It severely damaged a number of Forerunner colony worlds in the outer reaches of the galaxy, several centuries ago. This seemed to cost her considerable effort. I saw clearly the burden that had been placed upon her in the last few months. I could bear responsibility for only so much of that burden.
We must await the judgment of your father, she finally said, drawing back her survey, no doubt to the relief of ancillas around the planet.
Father's changed, too. He looks as if he's been groomed and tutored for great advancement, I said. Did the Master Builder mentor him for his last mutation?
Enough!
Mother cried, and stood. Dozens of little servant units scattered. With a shiver, she suggested we retire to contemplate the mantle before spending the hours of darkness in private study. Then she walked out quickly, scattering the units again, and left my sister and me under the faint wisps of nebular glow, and stars both diffuse and sharp, as if caught behind a sweeping, broken veil of tattered fog.
What is happening to this family? My sister asked. It can't be all your fault. Even before you left.
Mother's right, I said.
What is the Flood?
She asked abruptly, her instincts sharp.
Mother seems to know something. I certainly don't.
I shook my head. Frightful stories concocted for political gain, and perhaps that's all.
Was I now misleading my own sister?
With a shrug, I added, I defer to Father's judgment.
Oh, do you now? She said.
We parted at the gate to the veranda. and I returned to my room, high in a tower, looking out over the nearest Disk Sea, its rim surrounded by cascading waters, beneath the ever-changing gallery of our sky. Newborn stars, dying suns, the great turmoil in which forerunners had seen first light. I had done nothing for my family. Perversely, I now felt more connection with the Didact than I did with them. And even more perversely, perhaps that was how I would redeem myself to family and forerunners alike. How many betrayals could it take to go full circle? It was now even more imperative that I learn who I actually was and what I was about to become. No one could tell me. No one could teach me.